Oh, what's going on, guys? It is a Sunday night, a rare TNA pay-per-view recap. You know, I kicked off the year with TNA Genesis, actually the very beginning of the year, and we got to see Joe Hendry win the TNA World Heavyweight Championship for the first time. We thought he might win it last summer. They dragged it out, and they dragged it out, and finally he was able to win the big one. And then I bought Slammiversary, with the hope that we might see Mike Santana do the same thing. They were at the UBS Arena on Long Island here in New York. Mike Santana in his home state. A lot of friends, a lot of family there. They didn't do it. Trick Williams remains the TNA World Heavyweight Champion. And so now we head into what we had tonight. The biggest TNA show of the year, traditionally. Bound for Glory, their big event of the year. Mike Santana one-on-one with Trick Williams, trying to not just win his first world championship in TNA, but also bring the gold back home where it belongs, not on an NXT star, right? He's trying to rescue the championship. This was going to be his big moment. And when I think of Mike Santana, there's so much there. Because when I think of Mike Santana, I think of someone who lost 14 months. I'm sure to him it felt like years. 14 months of his career to a torn ACL that he suffered in blood and guts. This is a man who battled his demons. He went to rehab, right? He had a lot of personal struggles in his life. And he comes back and he doesn't want to settle. You know, he wants to take a chance and bet on himself. He wants to break out on his own because he believes in his head and in his heart that he can do things on his own that some people probably told him would never be possible because you're a tag team wrestler, right? You'll never be a world heavyweight champion. You can't be a singles champion. You're a tag team guy. And he felt that he could do more than that. So he had a sure thing and he said, I don't want to do this anymore. And he left AEW to bet on himself and go out on his own. And I could tell you that in House of Glory, he had the chance to be a world champion and show the world what he can do. He had the chance to go in there against big names that we would bring in every single month, right? Line them up, I'll knock them down. And the resume, the portfolio of work, of matches that he put together in that time that he had that championship, 554 days as the House of Glory world champion. You heard Tom Hannifin give a shout out to HOG tonight. The history that he has in that promotion and the work that he put in as the world champion is what helped prepare him for this moment tonight, where he was in the main event of this show, challenging for a championship for one of the biggest companies in the entire country, a company that currently has a partnership and an ongoing relationship going with WWE. And he is now the TNA World Heavyweight Champion. Mike Santana finally got his moment. Maybe some people thought he would never have. And it was a great moment. His family was there. His daughter was in the front row, bringing his daughter into the ring and handing her the championship. It was a great moment. And I am glad that TNA did the right thing. I don't know that there was ever any doubt. It always seemed as if this was kind of foregone. This had to be Santana's moment. Because again, Bound for Glory last year, they didn't put the title on Joe Hendry. They dragged it out until Genesis this year. So who's to say they wouldn't have done the same thing? I'm glad they did. The fans there in Lowell, Massachusetts, it might not have been New York, but they were very happy to see Mike Santana win that championship. I could have done without the silliness there after the match, which we'll get into. But that wasn't the only emotional moment on the show, seeing him win that championship. There was another match on the show. And you know, I talked about John Cena and AJ Styles just yesterday. So much fucking wrestling. I just did a review yesterday for Crown Jewel. And we had John Cena and AJ Styles, and I mentioned that it felt like the end of an era in many ways because these two men came up around the same time, and here we are now, you know, all these 20-plus years later, and now Cena's retiring, and AJ's retiring, and Tanahashi's retiring in a few months. And it really does feel like the passing of the guard and, you know, the end of an era. Tonight felt like the end of an era. We got two of these moments in the same weekend because tonight we had the Hardys and we had the Dudleys in what they called one final table, where the Hardys were putting all of their championships on the line, TNA tag team titles, NXT, well, not all of them, I guess, but TNA tag team titles, and the NXT tag team titles that they just won from Dark State on Tuesday night. And they went out there tonight, and there may be some divided opinion about the match itself in terms of the quality of the match or the way the match ended. I can tell you that what I thought we got tonight from these two teams was the best that they had to offer. Because these are two teams that ushered in an era of wrestling, and maybe they have some regrets about that era of wrestling. They ushered in the era of the TLC match. The tables, the ladders, the chairs, the crazy bumps, and all of the injuries and agony that come with it. They were wearing them on their faces. They were wearing, you could see the battle scar just in the way they were moving around tonight. I was watching D-Von Dudley, you know, wrestle his last match tonight. That's what he has said before, that this was going to be it. And I'm watching D-Von and just, you know, how he was moving. He's had his health issues. He almost lost his life. You know, very serious situation with D-Von in the last few years. He's lucky to be alive, and he's in the ring, and he's moving very gingerly. But you know what? He's hitting all of his high spots. He's giving everything he's got. Bully Ray, right? Doesn't move around the way he did 10, 20, 30 years ago, but he's in there giving everything he's got. And the Hardys right now are on this expedition of gold. They have found this renewed success, winning championships all over the place. One of the top attractions in TNA. And we'll see where they end up, because supposedly their contracts are up next month and we don't know what their future holds. But they went out there tonight and they gave you everything they got. You know, they laid it all on the line or on the table, as it were. I thought what we got from them tonight was a good match. It was the best possible match that you could have expected from these two teams. And then we got a very emotional moment when the match was over, where the Dudleys unlace their boots and remove their boots and hand them to Matt and Jeff Hardy, signifying the end of the Dudley Boys. And what a more fitting end to the Dudley Boys than to hand their boots off to one of the teams that they had some of their greatest matches and most memorable matches with. And they all shared an embrace in the ring. If you remember the end of an era match at WrestleMania many years ago, the hug on the stage in Miami with Undertaker and Triple H and Shawn Michaels, and they, you know, they're all embracing and they're looking out at the crowd. The Hardys and the Dudleys had their own moment like that tonight here at Bound for Glory. And I'm glad that it was able to happen on a, I mean, it may not have been WWE where they had all those TLC matches, but, you know, they had a lot of fans in the building and a lot of eyes on this show tonight. And I'm glad they were able to do something like that on that kind of a stage. 25 years later, 25 years ago this year, is when we had the first TLC match. A very appropriate ending, I think, to the career of the Dudley Boys. We had an absolutely sensational X Division Championship match on this show with Leon Slater and Javon Evans, marred by one of the worst finishes that you will ever see to a match like this on supposedly this company's biggest pay-per-view of the year. You would watch the finish of this match and think that this match was airing on an episode of Impact or NXT. It's hard to reconcile just how great that match was and how fucking god-awful the finish of that match was here tonight. But that being said, it was still an awesome match. And as far as my overall thoughts of the show, there were some mind-boggling booking decisions in the Call Your Shot gauntlet that we'll talk about, and then what I just mentioned in the X Division Championship match, and even the silliness that came after the main event when Nemeth came out and Kazarian, and it was just, that was completely unnecessary what they did there at the very end of the show. That being said, they sent the show home the right way with those last two matches. They did the right thing. We got some big moments out of it. When it was over, I felt like it was $34.95. For me, it was $34.95 well spent. On this show, I enjoyed this show on the whole, despite some of the silliness and some of the questionable decisions. We also had a quick cameo by the returning Chris Bay. It was great to see Chris Bay on the show. He didn't get the kind of reaction I was kind of expecting or hoping he might get when he walked out there, but they sent him out there to announce that TNA tonight set their new North American attendance record. They claimed of 7,794 fans in Lowell, Massachusetts for this show. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to see the turnstile count on that before I can verify this. That's what we need now in wrestling. We need to see the turnstile counts, or else it doesn't count. It's not official. This is your TNA Bound for Glory 2025 review. I am the Solemn Monster. Thank you guys for hanging out with me on a rare TNA Sunday night stream. This is TNA's biggest show of the year. I had to see Mike Santana win that championship tonight, and I really wanted to see that Javon Evans-Leon Slater match, and I'm excited to talk about that a little bit later on. My second Leon Slater match of the weekend, I got to call his match with the Amazing Red on Friday night. One of the great young shining stars in wrestling today is Leon Slater, and Javon Evans too. So that's why I was looking forward to that match. Like and subscribe, super chats are open. If we get any that come in, any questions, comments about the show, you will see them pop up on your screen, and I will be reading them a little bit later on here in the stream. So let us not waste any time. Let me do just mention that episode 933 of The Sound Off, all 2 hours of it, dropped earlier this afternoon. So if you have not yet had a chance to listen to the podcast, I do hope that you will do so tomorrow morning. It'll be there waiting for you in your Spotify or Apple Podcasts or however you get your shows. But please go ahead and check that out. And the Crown Jewel review is up as well from yesterday. Tom Hannifin and Matthew Raywalt, as usual, they handled the commentary for this show. I'll just mention real quick, they had a pre-show. And on the pre-show, they had some Hall of Fame inductions. And they had a modest setup for the Hall of Fame. It was in the arena. They had a small podium in the back of the arena with enough fans behind them that it kind of looked filled in. And Tommy Dreamer inducted the beautiful people into the Hall of Fame. And they had Lisa Marie Verone, the former Victoria, or Tara in TNA, former Knockouts champion, who actually walked out with the original belt, the original version of the Knockouts championship. She did the induction for Mickie James. And Mickey's speech, I would say Mickey's speech was probably around 10 minutes or so. They were very economical with the Hall of Fame speeches, probably because they had a pre-show match to get to. I would have just, in that case, I would have given a little more time to the speeches and just, you know, ditch the pre-show match. But in her speech, Mickie James actually gave a shout out to one CM Punk. Because Mickie, in her early days in TNA, was part of the same faction with CM Punk. They were part of a little group called The Gathering, which was only together for a few months. Back in 2003, Raven was a part of that group as well, so she did give a shout-out to them. That pre-show match, by the way, had the Inspiration retaining their Knockouts tag team titles over the Elegance brand. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life can be tough for all of us. Therapy has lots of benefits, whether it's coping with a loss in your life, learning how to heal broken relationships, or find out things about yourself that you never even knew about. BetterHelp therapists have helped over 5 million people worldwide on their mental health journeys. That's a lot of lives changed for the better. October 10th, we celebrated World Mental Health Day, but the celebration doesn't end after just one day. This year, BetterHelp is honoring those therapists that help make the world a better place, one connection at a time. I've used the platform myself in the past, although my reasons for doing so seem trivial by comparison when I think of some of the more serious issues that people have tried to address through BetterHelp. But what I can tell you is that even for me, I found it to be incredibly helpful just to have someone to talk to, and I appreciated that. And if it helped me, I know it can help you too. Finding the right therapist can be life-changing, and BetterHelp makes that process simple. BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you so that you can focus on your therapy goals. You fill out a short questionnaire that helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate mean that they usually get it right the first time. But if for any reason you're not happy with your match, you can switch to a different therapist at any time. And all BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S., and as the world's largest online therapy platform with over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp has an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on more than 1.7 million client reviews. The numbers speak for themselves. This World Mental Health Day, we're celebrating the therapists who have helped millions of people take a step forward. If you're ready to find the right therapist for you, BetterHelp can help you start that journey. Solomonster listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/solomonster. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/solomonster. Then we got into the main card. And the main card opened with Steve Maclin challenging Frankie Kazarian for Kazarian's TNA International Championship. Maclin came out first, and he had a moment with his mom, who was in the crowd at ringside, and she would actually end up becoming a small part of this match a little bit later on. Kazarian's entrance followed, and Maclin hit Kazarian with the suicide dive. Then he rolled him into the ring. The referee called for the bell. Kazarian came back and hit a sunset bomb that pulled Maclin from the apron hard to the floor. And there was no, oh, let me hold on to the rope for a few seconds and then I'll let go. No. He just fucking took him down to the mat and slammed him on the floor outside. So then Kazarian went over to taunt Macklin's mother in the crowd. And Macklin's mom stood up and she flipped him the double bird right to the man's face. This woman had no fear. And she was proud of it, too. She had a smile on her face when she did it. I like this lady. We've moved on from Trent's mom to Macklin's mom. That's the new thing now. So late in the match, Kazarian paid tribute to AJ Styles with a Pele kick, as AJ did to him just yesterday at Crown Jewel. AJ used the fade to black. The Hangman Page Deadeye, but Kazarian did it first. And so this was Kazarian, I guess, paying it back to... Is this going to be the new thing now where wrestlers are just going to do each other's moves and they're going to just pay tribute to each other back and forth every week? So anyway, he paid it back to AJ Styles. He also did the Christopher Daniels Angel's Wings, as AJ did in his match with John Cena yesterday. Kazarian set up for a fade to black from the middle rope, but Maclin avoided it. Maclin got Kazarian in the Tree of Woe, hit a spear. And then Maclin followed up with the KIA double underhook DDT, the Drew McIntyre Future Shock, for those who don't know. And he won the championship. And after the match, Carlos Silva entered the ring. This is a pattern on all of these TNA shows. Carlos Silva will always get into the ring to present the champion with their title when the match is over. And so this was the first of many times that we saw him doing this on this show. He got into the ring. He presented the belt to Maclin. Maclin went over and kissed his mom at ringside, and they both flipped the bird to the camera, because why not? I know if I won the championship, that's the first thing I would do. I would flip off everybody watching in TV land. It's good to know that he has that kind of relationship with his mom, where they have that in common. I thought it was a solid opener. Now, you know, they opened with a title change. I think as far as the arena, the Songus Center in Lowell, Massachusetts is where they were. I thought it looked good on TV. It looked good. You could see, you know, empty seats in the crowd, but, it was mostly full. I just like the aesthetics. I just thought it looked nice and it looked, you know, big time for a TNA pay-per-view. I mean, they weren't in like a huge arena or anything, like a big dome or anything, but I liked it. I liked the look of the show. I liked the aisleway they had. I think they put more seats in, so they sort of, they may have actually downsized the staging and the aisleway a little bit to accommodate more fans. But again, they claimed that they set their new North American attendance record. I know WrestleTix had mentioned they were up around 6,300 or 6,400 seats. They ended up announcing 7,700, so maybe the truth is somewhere in the middle. But for TNA, that's a lot of people. Now, after this, we had Tessa Blanchard with Victoria Crawford, the former Alicia Fox, in her corner, against Gia Miller, who entered with Jody Threat in her corner, the same Jody Threat who is likely going to lose her championship in Winnipeg next weekend to one Mercedes Moné when Mercedes wins title number 11. But that's next weekend. That's October 19th. So Jody Threat was in her corner. Now, for those who don't know, Gia Miller has been an interviewer in TNA now for about 5 years. She does wrestle independently, but I believe this was, her first match in TNA, or at least one of the few that she's had in the last 5 or 6 years in this company. She's an interviewer. She's an announcer, an interviewer. This is not a spot that you would usually find her in. But there was an angle that they shot going back to Slammiversary with her and Tessa Blanchard, where she attacked Gia Miller. And as a result, Santino Marella suspended Tessa Blanchard. And remember, at Slammiversary, she had to physically be removed. She was carried out of the building, and we had not seen her since. Now, as far as the reason why Tessa disappeared for a few months and has only just recently reemerged, we got our answer today from one Tessa Blanchard herself on her YouTube channel, because she posted a video letting everybody know that the reason that she was missing for the past 3 months is that she got a boob job. There you go. She said it was something that she had been thinking about for a long time, and she decided to go ahead and do it. The new and improved Tessa Blanchard. Roderick says, 11? When did she win number 10? Roderick, you got to keep up with the times, man. Mercedes won her 10th championship and tied Ultimo Dragon this past Friday in Denmark. So she is now 10 belts Monet. And next weekend, she will be 11 belts Monet. And after that, she will be 12 belts Monet. Because the train keeps going. The train is not going to stop. It's the way it goes. You know, Indy Hartwell is the reigning HOG Women's World Champion. Mercedes beat Indy in House of Glory back in March. Don't tell Mercedes this, though. So Blanchard was very nonplussed with Gia's offense earlier. She clearly was not taking this woman seriously. Blanchard offered her a headlock, which she took, but Tessa quickly escaped. Blanchard turned her back, and Gia got a quick cradle for a near fall. And at that point, Tessa stopped screwing around and started taking things a little more seriously. She suplexed her on the stairs outside, then she beat her up in front of her family at ringside. Back in the ring, Blanchard distracted the referee so that Victoria Crawford could get a shot in, and Crawford interfered right in front of the referee, who ejected her. So security tried to escort Crawford away. She was being resistant to this, and Tessa tried to intervene. So then Jody Threat came off the top rope with a cannonball and took everybody out. Threat then chased Crawford to the back, and that was the last we saw of them for this match. Miller made a comeback. She hit a Fez press and a monkey flip. She monkey flipped Blanchard out of the corner. She went for a crossbody, and she missed pretty badly. She mostly got Tessa's legs, and Tessa sold it anyway, got a near fall. Miller walked into a boot, and Blanchard worked her over with right hands in the corner. And so then Miller countered by locking up Blanchard's arms and hit her with a straight headbutt. Miller got Tessa up in a powerbomb position, but Blanchard pulled out a roll of quarters. I did not see where the roll of quarters came from. I would imagine her expanded bust. Now that she's got, you know, more room to kind of tuck things in there, maybe that's why she got the boob job. I don't know, but she pulled out a roll of quarters. I mean, it had to come from somewhere. She pulled out, and she doesn't exactly have pockets on her gear. So she pulled out the roll of quarters. The referee was fussing around with the turnbuckle pad in the corner that Tessa had pulled off earlier, so didn't see any of this. And Tessa hit her in the head with a roll of quarters, and then she pinned her to win the match. The good news for Tessa is that I didn't hear any of the usual chants that will often be heard during Tessa Blanchard matches. So that's the good news if you're Tessa Blanchard. The bad news is the crowd did not get behind Gia Miller as the underdog babyface here the way that they probably wanted them to. The crowd mostly fell flat. The crowd really didn't react in any sort of major way. But then it was time for the annual Call Your Shot Gauntlet match. This was their 7th year in a row doing this match here at Bound for Glory. Now, keep in mind, this is intergender, so you have male participants, you have female participants. Two wrestlers enter. After 2 minutes, a new wrestler enters every 60 seconds. Eliminations occur by pinfall, submission, or over the top rope with both feet touching the floor. And when the final two wrestlers are left in the ring, it then changes to a singles match. And the winner of that singles match will then not only win a beautiful trophy that looks like it was probably ordered on Amazon.com, but in addition to the Amazon trophy, you also win a championship match anytime within the next year for the championship of your choosing. Boy, I haven't heard this stipulation before. So anyway, those are the rules for the gauntlet match here. So Lei Ying Li was the first entrant. Mara Sade was the second entrant, the former Jakara Jackson from NXT, who was just part of Team TNA in the NXT versus TNA Women's Survivor Series match at Showdown this past Tuesday. Ryan Nemeth was the third entrant, the Knockouts double team Nemeth, which, I mean, maybe he wouldn't have minded that so much, I mean, the way that was phrased. Then we had the other Nemeth brother, Nick Nemeth. He was out next at number four. Sade dropped Nick with a super kick. Lee and Sade, they tried to dump Nick out of the ring. Ryan, though, made the save. And then Nick took out both ladies with a double clothesline. Cedric Alexander, he entered at number five. Alexander dropped the Nemeth brothers with the German suplexes. Rich Swann was out next at number six. AJ Francis was in at number seven. He eliminated Mara Sade and Lei Ying Li, so they're gone. Francis then chokeslammed Rich Swann, his own partner, in first class. And then he dumped him to the floor. So then Sinner and Saint, the tag team of Sinner and Saint, they made their way out together, but then they had to do a coin flip to determine which one of them, because only one of them apparently is allowed here in this match, which one of them was going to make their way down to the ring. And that person ended up being Travis Williams. He entered at number eight. Then we had at number nine, we had famous YouTuber. No, not Solomonster. I'm right here. I'm not in Lowell, Massachusetts. I didn't get my invitation to be part of the Call Your Shot Gauntlet. But we had famous YouTuber BDE, who is a big wrestling fan. He does have 1.4 million subscribers on YouTube. So he's got that. I think he's got like almost 200,000 followers on Instagram. Apparently he makes WWE content on YouTube. So he started wrestling this year. He's got a handful of matches under his belt, mostly for Sami Callihan's promotion, Pro Wrestling Revolver. But this was his TNA debut. And he did a spot with AJ Francis, and then he ate a super kick from Nick Nemeth. Number 10 was all three members of the Rascals. Maybe soon to be four. There's another Rascal that actually just got released by WWE. He'll be free in less than 30 days. So the Rascals may well end up expanding, but it was Trey Miguel, Zachary Wentz, and Myron Reed. So all three of them entered this gauntlet, and I'm watching this going, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. And the announcers said that Santino Marella earlier in the day said that they count as one entrant, so it's okay. But we just saw Sinner and Saint come out. And we were told that they had to flip a coin because only one of them could be in the gauntlet. Now, how is it possible that this tag team, only one member is allowed in the gauntlet, but then all three of these men come out and they count as one? This was never explained. I don't know. So then the trio eliminated AJ Francis once they got into the ring. Danny Luna entered at number 11. Eric Young was number 12. He went after his former partner, Travis Williams. Williams almost eliminated Young with a clothesline, so they fought onto the apron. And Young gave him a low blow, and then he dropped him with a pile driver on the apron, and that was the end of Travis Williams. He got dumped for the elimination. Jake Something entered at number 13. This man is an absolute unit. When he ran out there to the ring, he should definitely be higher up on the card. Eric Young smacked BDE and eliminated him, so back to YouTube he goes. Rosemary was next at number 14. Miguel and Alexander, they were eliminated by Eric Young. And then we had the hometown man at number 15. And he came out with the UMass mascot, Jake something tried to hold the hometown man for the mist from Rosemary, but hometown man ducked and something got misted and eliminated. You might even say he got something in his eyes. So long, Jake something. He is gone here from the gauntlet match. So, Zach Clayton. Yes, the Zach Clayton, everybody. I couldn't believe it myself. He was out at number 16, escorted out by Little Guido of the FBI. Not the only ECW cameo that we would get here on this show. Danny Luna eliminated Rosemary. Hometown Man eliminated Danny Luna. Jody Threat was out at number 17. And she ran around and around the ring on the outside until all of a sudden Frankie Kazarian floored her. I don't even know where the fuck he came from. But Kazarian floored her with a clothesline. And she never got into the ring. So what ended up happening here is that Kazarian took her spot. Santino Morella was trying to argue with him and he gave Santino a shove. So, of course, what happened next? It's time for the next entrant. And when the countdown ended, we heard Santino's music. He entered at number 18. And Tom Hannifin tried to explain it that, well, he must have communicated something, you know, to the people in the back, I guess, to tell them to play his music. I mean, bless his heart. He tried. He tried to explain the unexplainable here. So Santino hit Kazarian with a cobra from the floor. I don't remember why Kazarian was bent over with his head through the fucking ropes, but he got caught by the cobra. And then Santino entered the ring, and as soon as he entered the ring, he was instantly clotheslined out by Nick Nemeth. He wasn't ready yet. He wasn't ready yet, but it didn't matter because he was eliminated. Now, of course, he's the director of authority for TNA, so if he wanted to, he could just reinstate himself into the match. That's what I would do. Like, if I had that level of power, you know, I would be drunk on power. Right? Why not just use it? If I was in the match and I was eliminated, I would just put myself back in the match. So Matt Cardona, you know who's always ready? Santino may not have been ready, but Matt Cardona was ready. He was out there at number 19, fresh off of his loss to Killer Cross on Friday night. Cardona eliminated Clayton, and then he pulled Guido into the ring and eliminated him too. Number 20 was the Southern Psycho, Mance Warner. He was escorted out to the ring by his fiancée. I always think of that Seinfeld episode. I have lost my fiancée. Have you seen my fiancée? I have lost my fiancée. Yes. He came out to the ring with his fiancée, Steph DeLander. The other rascals were eliminated while Warner made his entrance. So DeLander gave Warner a steel chair. Everyone let Warner kindly hit them with the chair until Cardona caught him from behind. Eric Young tried to toss the hometown man. He skinned the cat, stayed alive. They fought out to the apron, and Young eliminated the hometown man with a low blow to very loud boos. And Cardona then eliminated Eric Young to a big pop, and then he tossed Mance Warner as well. So this left Cardona all alone with both Nemeth brothers. They double-teamed Cardona. He made a comeback, though. Cardona tossed Ryan over the top rope. He stayed out on the apron, though. And Ryan held Cardona for a super kick from Nick, but Cardona ducked. And Ryan was eliminated by Big Brother. See you later, Ryan Nemeth. So it looked like we were about to get a singles match here. Right? We're about to get a singles match with Matt Cardona and Nick Nemeth. This is like something out of 2009 WWE, right? We got Zack Ryder. We got Dolph Ziggler. These are your final two here in the gauntlet, or so we thought. Warner and DeLander, they distracted Cardona while Nemeth dumped him over the top. And since Frankie Kazarian was never actually eliminated, that meant that Kazarian and Nick Nemeth were the final two. So they wrestled for a little bit. And eventually they did a double pin spot coming off of a superplex where they both kind of hooked each other's legs and the shoulders were down and we got a double pin. Now, Santino Morella is already out there. And the fans are obviously not very happy with this. They're hoping that they'll just restart the match because that would be the thing to do, right? You restart the fucking match. But of course, this is TNA and we can't do that. So Santino says that for the first time in the history of the Call Your Shot Gauntlet match, we have co-winners, and the crowd booed the hell out of that announcement, and deservedly so. What an absolute dog shit finish to this match here. They did a comedy spot where both of them were kind of holding on to the trophy as they left down the aisle. This was just total comedy. And the crowd just booed all of this. I will say I had fun with parts of this match. I did find it overall to be enjoyable. That finish is inexcusable. When you dedicate 30 minutes to a match like this, okay, this went half an hour. It was a long match. And then you give people a finish like that, you just do yourself a disservice, especially on your biggest show of the year. Just absolutely atrocious booking here at the very end. And I'm sure they have an idea for where they want to go with it, and they're going to have some more comedy on television with these two. Find another way to do it. You know, you don't end this match in the way that they ended this match. So for all the fun moments that there may have been, this finish almost negated the entire thing. That finish was terrible. Now, after this, we had the NXT superstar, Kalani Jordan, right? A lot of big things in her future. Kalani Jordan is a former North American champion, but she is also the reigning TNA Knockouts champion. She just won the title at Victory Road, what was it, like 2 weeks ago, maybe? She was defending the TNA Knockouts title here against Indy Hartwell. So Indy comes out. Again, Indy is kind of in the same position that Mike Santana was in, where she's trying to rescue the championship away from NXT, bring the title home here to TNA. Hartwell goes over and hugs her family in the front row. Now, the announcer said that it took 4 flights for her parents to get here to see her get an opportunity at the Knockouts Championship. Oh, 4 flights. Let's find out if it was worth it. Both women went for near falls off cradles. They dodged each other's strikes early in the match. Jordan hung up Hartwell in the ropes and came off with a leg drop for a near fall. Hartwell caught Jordan with a spine buster after that, and then she stretched Kalani's back across her knee. She was damn near bending this woman in half. Jordan fought out of it. They did the yay boo punches, with Hartwell getting the yays because she's the actual TNA talent in this match. Hartwell went for a Death Valley driver. Kalani escaped and hit a split jawbreaker for a near fall. Jordan locked in a half crab, and Hartwell escaped. So Jordan comes off the top with a crossbody, and Indy rolls through, powers her up. Jordan, though, turns that into a small package for a 2 count. Hartwell and Jordan, they struggled a little bit on a powerbomb spot, but eventually Hartwell did hit the move, and Indy went for a boot. Kalani caught it, hit a spinning kick. Jordan hit a frog splash, only got a near fall. So Hartwell came back with a top rope elbow for a near fall of her own, and then she went for her Hertz Donut spinning facebuster finish. Jordan, though, countered with a cradle. Hartwell tried it again. This time she caught Jordan with her finish, but unfortunately for her, Kalani was too close to the ropes, and she was able to break the count with her foot. So Hartwell went to the top again, but Jordan followed her up there, and Kalani tried for a Spanish fly. Hartwell elbowed her down, and then Hartwell went for another top rope diving elbow, but nobody home, and she crashed and burned. Kalani then hit Hartwell with her split-legged moonsault in the corner. It did not look great. She pretty much missed it for the most part. But that was the finish, and so she covered her, and she got the pin anyway to retain the Knockouts Championship. Now, after the match was over, Hartwell went over. She did shake. You know, Kalani put her hand out, and she shook her hand. And, you know, Kalani raised her arm and was being very, very gracious here. And Indy went outside, and she went to the front row so she could be comforted by her family. They flew this woman's parents halfway around the world. 4 flights, they said, just to watch their daughter fucking lose. That is brutal. That is brutal. This was not a great match. It had its moments. It had its clunkiness, but it had its moments. But outside of that, I just thought it was just very, you know, basic stuff. I didn't think Hartwell was winning the championship. Like when I did my predictions earlier, I had picked Kalani to win because she just won the title. Literally in the last few weeks, she won the championship at Victory Road, and I didn't think that they were going to take it off of her that quickly. But then I saw Indy's family at ringside, and when I saw her parents, and I think she had her sister or sisters, might have been in the front row, I saw that and I thought, oh, she's got to be winning this match. Why else would they... Or she, you know, fly her family out if there wasn't some big moment planned. And then she went in there and she lost. And I think it surprised me a little bit. And I also thought after I saw that it boded well for Mike Santana winning in the main event. Because it's like, all right, they had the NXT star go over and retain her championship. There's no way on this, their biggest night of the year, that they are going to go out there in the main event and do the exact same thing and suck the life out of this crowd. So I actually thought her winning made it even more obvious and boded well for Mike Santana in the main event. Now, after the match was over, we'll go backstage for a quick segment. And we see the Call Your Shot trophy is sitting on a table. The Nemeth brothers are having a conversation. And they're arguing over how Nick is going to use the trophy. And so Kazarian shows up and he wants to know, what is this we business that I hear you guys talking about? And Nick Nemeth says that he knows Frankie's stats because Kazarian's going through all of his accomplishments. He goes, look, I know all of your stats. And normally any other time I would agree with you. I would be on your side. But I am a former TNA World Heavyweight Champion, which you have never been. And Kazarian said, well, maybe I will be by the time this night is over. And he leaves, and then the Nemeths have to pretend like, oh, they have no idea what he's referring to. What could he be talking about? Oh, gee, I don't know. He just won a trophy for a title shot anytime he wants. I don't know. What could he possibly be teasing here? After this, we had Order 4, which is Mustafa Ali's faction against the system, comprised of Moose, Eddie Edwards, Brian Myers, JDC, and Alicia Edwards, Eddie's wife, in a hardcore war, which was basically a war games match without the cage and without the two rings. You take those two elements out of it, all the other rules apply. So it starts one-on-one. There's a new member that enters every, I think, minute or two, carrying a new weapon with them, and the match cannot end until all of the participants have made their way out. So it's like, okay, now we can begin the war games. That's the basic gist of it. Jason Hotch, I love that name. Jason started out with a trash can against Eddie Edwards, who entered with his family. He had Wally the Boss. Is he a beaver? What is he? Is he the Boston Beaver? What is he? Apparently, he's the Red Sox mascot. We'll call Wally the Boston Beaver, but he comes out with the mascot. Wally distracts Hotch by thrusting his pelvis at him, which allows Edwards to hit Hotch with a dive to start the match. Hotch hit Edwards with a drop kick. He went for a dive. Edwards blocked that by throwing a trash can at his head. So then John Skyler was in next for Order 4 with a steel chair. That was his weapon of choice. JDC was in next with a New England Patriots helmet. Edwards placed the chair over Skyler's crotch, and JDC hit the chair with the helmet. Skyler came up busted open badly from a spot here, and JDC pulled a cheese grater out from under the ring, and he used it to work over the cut to make him bleed even more. Tasha Steeles came in wearing a New York Yankees jersey and a bat as her weapon of choice. And so after that, John Skyler, they show John Skyler here. He's just a fucking bloody mess, this guy. Alicia Edwards comes out with a kendo stick, and she cracks Tasha Steeles in the head with it. Eddie Edwards pulls out a staple gun, and he stapled Skyler in the face. JDC stapled Hotch in the crotch, and Alicia stapled Steeles right in the ass. Agent Zero was out next for Order 4. I'm not too familiar with Agent Zero. I will tell you, though, he looks like he has not missed a single day at the gym. Every day is gym day for Agent Four. And he press slammed JDC. He tossed Eddie Edwards into the ringside steps. He tossed the top half of the stairs at Eddie's head. Brian Myers came out next without a weapon. Come to think of it, I don't think that Agent Zero, I don't think he came out with a weapon either. But I know for a fact Myers did not come out with a weapon. At least I don't think he did. So Myers tried to use one of the trash cans around ringside. Zero just put him down with a big boot. And Agent Zero dumped Myers with a hanging tree slam on the trash can. So Alicia Edwards rolls into the ring and finds herself surrounded by the members of Order 4 as Mustafa Ali now, right, the leader, makes his way out to the ring. He has a sledgehammer with him. Eddie Edwards saved his wife momentarily from an attack. Moose entered last for his team, and Moose stood one-on-one with Agent Zero after a pretty even face-off here. Zero was able to dump Moose to the floor. All the members of Order 4 and the system were brawling on the floor. Agent Zero came flying over the top rope with a big dive out onto the pile. So back in the ring, Tasha Steelz pulls out a kendo stick wrapped in barbed wire, and Alicia Edwards dumps thumbtacks in the ring. I feel like we get thumbtacks every single week now. Thumbtacks used to be something that you would really, every now and then, it would be like, oh my God, you know, we got thumbtacks. And now we get it every single week. Pay-per-view, television, it doesn't really seem to matter anymore. You know, if you watch wrestling from different promotions, pretty safe bet that if not every week, every other week, you're going to be able to find thumbtacks somewhere on the show. So Alicia hit Tasha with the kendo stick to get rid of her. And then Alicia Edwards found herself alone in the ring with Agent Zero. And Agent Zero gave her a hanging tree slam right onto the thumbtacks, which were littered all over the mat. And she took all of these thumbtacks. I mean, when they showed a shot of her back, I mean, it looked like she had thumbtacks just stuck all over her back. It was a nasty bump. So Eddie tried to check on his wife. Ali, though, hit him with a steel chair and then dumped him. Ali dumped more thumbtacks out on top of Alicia. And she was very careful to keep her mouth closed so they wouldn't go in her mouth. And now he's pouring thumbtacks on top of her. She's got tacks in her flesh. And now he's dumping more on top of her. And what is he going to do? He's going to go up to the top rope while she's laying there. And he's going to set up for a 450 splash, which, if you think about it, is a pretty fucking stupid thing to do. Because you may land on her, but you're also going to land on the thumbtacks that are all over the ring. And you just put thumbtacks on top of her. So he doesn't seem too bright. He's even less bright because she moved out of the way. And so when Ali hit the 450, he came and splatted on top of the thumbtacks. And I think the thing that horrified me the most about this, if you go back and watch it, he got a tack in his tit. If you go back and watch, it looked like he had a thumbtack sticking out of his nipple. You couldn't pay me enough money to take a tack to the tit. That of all the things we saw in this match, we saw people bleeding, we saw people getting stapled and all this bullshit. That might have been the thing that made me wince the most, honestly. When I saw that little shiny projectile over there by his nipple, I go, oh, that doesn't feel too good. So Eddie Edwards wrapped his knee in barbed wire and he leveled Ali with a Boston knee party wrapped up in the barbed wire, and he pinned him to win the match for his team. It was what it was called. It was a hardcore war. That's for sure. I think the Alicia Edwards spot with the tacks, it was certainly different seeing someone like Agent Zero delivering a tree slam to this woman onto the thumbtacks. That's not something you would see all the time. But, you know, outside of that, what was this? This was the payoff to an issue that has been brewing for months between these two warring factions. And so if you were going to blow off a feud like this, then they did a hell of a job of doing that. It certainly felt like a blow off to me. Now we get into the match that I was looking forward to the most coming into the show. We had Leon Slater against Javon Evans. Javon Evans from NXT. This was an interpromotional match for the TNA X Division Championship. They called this the youngest X Division title match in TNA history. And they're not lying about that. You've got two men here who are younger than the title itself. Think about that. I want you to do something. I want you to combine the ages of these two men. They're both 21 years old. You combine their ages, and they are still not as old as the average age of the WWE main event scene. In most cases. Many of the people who are on that WWE roster. That is scary, especially when you consider how good these two men are at the age that they are right now. So a lot of youth here in this match. And I got to say, hat tip to Tom Hannifin on commentary for that House of Glory shout out during the match. They did mention that Leon Slater just wrestled the Amazing Red the other night. Great match. Crowd was wild for this before they even locked up. They could feel that this was going to be something special. And they started, you know, this is awesome. And both guys teased big strikes against the other. And then they would mock their opponent for, you know, covering up. So they were playing cat and mouse. Slater caught Evans with a small package for a near fall after like six counters and reversals. Finally, Slater shoved Evans hard when he was backed up against the ropes. And that's when things started to get a little less friendly here between these two men. So Slater caught Evans with a chop. Evans fired back. And they were laying their shit in pretty good here. It was something I kind of noticed across the board here on this show. Evans sent Slater to the floor. He followed him out with the tope. Slater shoved Evans off the ropes when he went for a springboard and then followed him out with a dive. Back inside, Slater hit a crossbody for a near fall. Evans caught Slater with an over-the-ropes plancha and then came back into the ring with a springboard clothesline for a near fall. Evans hits a suplex, and he immediately kips up. And then Evans ducks an enziguri. Slater, though, hits a heel kick on the rebound. And Slater hit a great slingshot cutter for a near fall. Oh, this looked great. This looked great. Evans went to the top for something. Not Jake. Slater, though, blocked it, and they fought to the apron. Evans tried a suplex. Slater escaped, and he tried for the slingshot cutter again, but this time Evans countered it into a spinning DDT that sent Slater across the ring. And Javon Evans, who is just an incredible athlete. I mean, he's just super fun to watch when you watch any of his matches. And he's been on a tear these last few months with the matches that he's been in. Javon Evans then hits, after this, the out-of-the-ring springboard cutter at this point here in this match, out over the top rope. And this man clipped the apron with his ass on the way down, and then he crashed into the floor. I mean, it took a hard landing on his tailbone, his thigh. There is no way. I'm not saying there's a difference between being hurt and being injured. I'm not saying he's injured, but there is no way that he did not hurt himself on this landing. Like, this looked like it sucked. I would not have wanted to be him when he landed on that floor outside. So that was a crazy spot. Evans struggled to get to his feet. Slater slid back into the ring. Evans came off the top with a splash. Javon then hit a second top rope splash from halfway across the ring. Dude, he cleared half the fucking ring on this dive. Only got a two count. Evans then hit a Rana with a cradle for a near fall. Evans came off the ropes with a springboard right into a flying hangman's neck breaker from Slater. And the fans at this point here in this match were losing their fucking minds. These people were going crazy. They were eating everything up that they were being served. Like, here's the main entree. You know, let me know if you need anything. When you need a little salt, let me know. They were eating everything up that these guys were serving. Both men struggled to their feet. They were exchanging strikes along the way. Slater wore out Evans with some chops. And then Leon left himself open to a chop. He goes, go ahead, right? He's offering himself up for a chop. Evans rears back like he's going to chop him, but he fakes him out. And instead of chopping him, he drops him with a cutter, which is fucking tremendous. And I can't believe that this isn't something Randy Orton has never tried before. I don't remember him ever trying a spot like that before. Today's episode is sponsored by Hims. Hair loss is a major cause of stress for a lot of men, and it can make them desperate. Desperate for a quick fix. They may go scouring the internet looking for any kind of remedy that they can. I mean, hell, they might rub lemon juice into their follicles because some random person on Reddit told them, hey, it really works. Except it doesn't. The only thing you'll get out of it is a head that smells like a bottle of Pledge. You don't need to go looking for some crackpot theory on what works and what doesn't. The answer is staring you right in your face. Through Hims, you get access to clear solutions, expert guidance, and an online process that takes the confusion out of the whole thing. There's no need for any added stress. Hims offers convenient access to a range of prescription hair loss treatments with ingredients that work, including chews, oral medications, serums, and sprays. Doctor-trusted, clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil can stop further hair loss and regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. You shouldn't have to jump through hoops just to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. No hidden fees, no surprise costs, just real personalized care on your schedule. Think of Hims as your digital front door that you swing wide open, and on the other side is your old self. With simple 100% online access to trusted treatments for real health concerns, all in one place. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/solomonster. That's hims.com/solomonster for your free online visit. hims.com/solomonster. Individual results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Featured products include compounded drug products, which the FDA does not approve or verify for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. So then he hits another springboard cutter, flush. Slater kicks out at two. This was just insanity. Evans goes up to the top. Slater catches him with an enziguri and follows him up. They fought. Both guys jumped to the floor on opposite sides. They jumped off, but it's almost like they kind of fell off. One guy on one side tumbled to the floor. The other guy tumbled to the floor on the other side. So Slater tried for a springboard off the barricade. Evans shoved him into the crowd. Evans then hit a running dive over the barricade onto Slater in the crowd. Javon jumped the rail. Slater followed. And he hit his own dive over the barricade as the bell suddenly sounded, and they signified that the 20-minute time limit had expired. And I said, fucking hell, this better not be the way this match is going to end. I was fuming. As were these fans, by the way. These fans did not like hearing that bell. I mean, the heat that this got was crazy. All of a sudden, Santino Marella comes out over by the entrance ramp. And he announces that, you know, normally on these pay-per-views, we have to keep things tight. We only have so much time. And people start booing. And he goes, but I'll tell you what, we got to give this 5 more minutes, he said. We got to give it minutes. I don't know about minutes, but we got to give it 5 more minutes. And the place exploded. And I'm thinking, okay, they brought us down and they got us really upset. But now they're hitting us between the eyes and they're like, all right, 5 more minutes, right? And this building is going nuts. These people are losing their minds. And you got Leon Slater backs up into one corner. You got Javon Evans, he backs up into the other corner. And the referee's like, are you ready? Are you ready? And everyone's getting all amped up, right? And they ring the bell and this match resumes and everybody is just on their feet. So Slater hits Evans with Utopia. Evans slid to the floor. Slater followed him with his over-the-post dive. We see Montez Ford do this on SmackDown almost every week also. It's just a crazy move. Slater then went to the top. Evans, though, jumped up and pulled Slater down with a top rope Spanish fly. Look at that. I combined the two. He pulled him down with a top rope Spanish fly. And Evans then went for the cover. And at that point, the lights went out. And now I'm getting pissed. Because we were in the middle of this great professional wrestling match with these two great young stars. And you want to do the false finish. You know what? it pissed me off, but then it's like five more minutes and everybody went nuts and I'm like, okay, that's cool. I can dig that, right? I can buy into that. Now you're bringing all of this fuckery into this match and the fans are just on their feet and now you're messing with their heads here. And this is what really pissed me off. So they do the lights out gimmick and I don't know what's going on. I have no idea now what these people are planning here. The lights go out. And who runs out from the crowd into the ring to attack both of these men? Dark State. They sent fucking Dark State from NXT into the ring to attack Slater and to attack Evans. The crowd begins, double team power bombs. I mean, they lay these two kids out. And the crowd chants, fuck these guys. And you will have people, including probably in WWE, who will look at this and will go, oh, well, they're getting heat, right? This is great. This is what we wanted. They're getting heat. Only it didn't feel like they were getting heat. It felt like the heat was really more being projected onto the company for booking this bullshit finish here to this match. Sure, I mean, the people hated Dark State, but I think the heat that this got for being a terrible finish superseded that. And that's the kind of heat that you really don't want to get. Because you had a lot of people who were very much looking forward to this match. I don't want to say they didn't deliver. We got a great match out of it. But my God, for a match like this to end in this way was just horrendous. Just absolutely horrendous. And this, they're going to keep trying this with these Dark State guys. And they're young and you want to try to get them over. Fine. This was not the place, in my opinion, to do something like this. Not in this way. What we saw here, this was a TV finish. This was not a pay-per-view finish, let alone a pay-per-view finish on what is supposedly TNA's biggest pay-per-view of the year. I don't really think WWE gives a shit about that, of course. And it's very obvious what happened here. Politics. That's what happened. And this is what happens sometimes when you have two promotions who are working together in some form or fashion. WWE said, okay, you want Javon Evans on your pay-per-view. You want to put together this dream match. We'll give you Javon Evans. But you're not beating Javon Evans. And Leon Slater is the youngest TNA X Division champion of all time. He won the title at Slammiversary. He got a big win over Moose. They were not going to let another NXT guy beat one of their guys and take one of their championships, which they have done plenty of these last few months. So I totally understand TNA saying, well, we don't want Leon Slater to lose. So I guess we're at an impasse here. What do we do? The reality is, if either of these guys lost the match, it doesn't hurt them. You have a match like this, the fans are going to love it no matter what. It's not going to kill either of them to lose. But the companies, they don't look at it that way. It's like, this is our guy. This is our commodity. We have big plans for him. He's our big star on the rise. And you're not going to beat him. And so this is what they compromised on. And this is what they came up with here. And maybe they run it back one more time. I feel like if they were not willing to budge, if one company was not willing to budge and the other one was not willing to budge, then I don't really see the point in even running this back because you're just going to end up in the same situation anyway, no matter what. Maybe they end up as tag team partners. I think it's likely that we get a tag team match, you know, where the two of them end up on the same side against Dark State. I think that's very possible. Again, I get why it was done because this is what happens in these types of situations. But I just look at this and go, you did a time limit draw to tease a non-finish, right? You tease that, and then you end up giving people five more minutes and giving them the impression that, wow, you're actually going to give them what they want, only to them smack them across the face and kick them in the dick and say, well, you're getting that non-finish after all. I just thought that was terrible. An absolutely terrible way for this match to end. And I will say that even with the shit finish, this is still a match of the year contender. I love this match. It's one of my favorite matches that I've seen all year. It was easily the match of the weekend, easily the match of the month so far. We're not even halfway through the month so far, but this was fantastic. And it was a small glimpse into what you can expect to see from these two as the months and years go on. And think about this. Youngest X Division champion of all time, Javon Evans, same thing, 21 years old. As young as they are and as great as they are right now with this age, how great are they going to be 5 years from now? How great are they going to be 3 years from now, 10 years from now, right? you keep working this style, you're going to have to adapt and adjust. Javon Evans is fun to watch, right? The way he flies around the ring and his just his agility and dexterity and all of that. But that's not going to last, right? 10 years from now, I don't know that he's going to be able to wrestle the same way. So he'll have to adapt his style as time goes on. But right now, man, he is going out there just balls to the wall every single time we see him in the ring, and he's having killer matches. And Leon Slater, same thing. Super talented, goes out there, has great, exciting, fast-paced matches. So, of course, you put these two together, and it just they blend together so well because they have similar styles, and they want to go out there and steal the show. That's what they did tonight. They absolutely stole the show. They deserved a better finish than the one that they booked here for this match. That was the only real shameful part about this. But as young as they are and as great as they are now, scary to think where they're going to be 5 years from now. So this delivered. Finish aside, I had very high expectations for this match, and even still, this match delivered. This was great. Then after this, it was time for one final table. That is how they dubbed this match. One final table match for the TNA and NXT Tag Team Championships, with the Hardys defending against the Dudley Boys. We got a Spike Dudley cameo. I mentioned Little Guido earlier. We got a Spike Dudley cameo here on this show. The Dudleys came out, and Bully then, or Bubba, Bully, whatever you want to call him, he looks to the aisle and he starts waving, right? He's waving someone to come out. And here comes Spike Dudley. It threw me off a little bit at first because he's bald now. But then I remembered him from the Chris Van Vliet interview. I said, of course he's bald. But he comes out, and there's little Spike. Everyone cheers, and all three men embrace, and then Spike hands Devon his Dudley glasses, and then he hands Bubba his Dudley glasses, and then he waves to the crowd, and he goes to the back. And I said, good for him. Good for Spike. He doesn't have to take a bump tonight. Because for a moment there, I thought he was coming out for the match with them, and that they were going to use him to take the bumps that they can't take. Poor Spike. God knows what they were going to do to this poor guy, as if he hasn't taken enough abuse in his career. But they spared him, and he went to the back, and we didn't see him again. So as they're coming out, the Dudleys went and set two tables up in the aisle. The Hardys were out next. They brought a ladder out with them and a steel chair, and they set the ladder up in front of those tables, so you knew what was coming. Like, before the match even began, before the bell even rang, you knew that, you know, chaos was about to ensue here. And the object of the match, the rules, you had to put each member of the opposing team through a table in order to win the match and walk out as the champions. So, and it didn't matter in what order, or, yeah, it's not like a strap match where they had that old rule where you have to touch all four turnbuckles, and if there's an interruption, you got to start over. None of that bullshit. Just put both members through tables at different points in the match, you win the match. So the Dudleys immediately dumped Jeff to the floor. And the Dudleys, I will say, they were wearing their old camo gear. Devon, obviously, he's moving around a lot slower. He's had a lot of health issues in recent years. Was it a heart attack or a stroke? I think he might have had multiple strokes. But he's doing well now. I know he's got his podcast. And he has talked about how this is it. Like, for him, I don't know about Bubba, but for him, this is it. If he was going to do one more match, that was going to be it. So he was waiting for the right opportunity. And the right opportunity came along when TNA wanted to put this match together. And he was like, all right. So I do believe that this is it for Devon, and just watching him out there. I mean, cosmetically, you know, he looks fine. But just the way he was moving, you could tell that his days in the ring are behind him. But immediately they dump Jeff to the floor, and they hit Matt with a 3D. Jeff tried for a whisper in the wind. The Dudleys did their best Samoa Joe impression and just casually noped and just walked away. And he crashed and burned. So then Devon gave Jeff the WhatsApp headbutt off the ropes. The crowd called for Devon to get the tables. Bully led the countdown, and the entire building at the end of the countdown yelled, "Get the tables." So Devon went to the floor, and he slid two tables into the ring. Bully set one of the tables up, and they hit 3D on Jeff through the table. Just like that. And the announcers explained that they were halfway there. All they had to do now was put Matt Hardy through a table, and we have got new TNA and NXT tag team champions. Can you imagine the Dudleys as the new NXT tag team champions? So Matt came back in with a steel chair, and Matt was able to send Bubba to the floor on a miscommunication. Matt and D-Von, they brawled on the floor. D-Von took too long setting up a table, and Matt caught D-Von with the twist of fate. So Matt sets up D-Von for an elbow through the table. D-Von, though, rolls out of the way, and Matt comes flying off the apron with a diving elbow drop through the table, and the table disintegrates upon impact. But the announcers explained that Matt was not eliminated because you have to be offensively put through a table. You can't just put yourself through a table. Someone has to, I guess, grab you and either put you through the table or set you up and then crash through a table. And that's not what happened here. So Jeff came back. He took out Bubba on the floor with a clothesline from the apron. Back inside, Bubba set a table up in the corner, and Matt dodged a charge from Bully. Bully bounced into the table. I don't believe he broke it, so that did not count. Elsewhere, D-Von slammed a chair across Jeff's back. He placed him on one of the two tables that I mentioned were set up in the aisleway where that ladder is. So he lays Jeff on the table. D-Von now begins to climb the ladder. And Matt makes his way over, and Matt cuts him off, and then both men drop from the ladder safely. Because I was just thinking, like, I know D-Von Dudley, for those who don't know, is terrified of heights. He's been terrified of heights his entire life, which is insane to think about when you think this guy is part of some of the most iconic ladder matches in the history of wrestling. The first TLC match at SummerSlam 25 years ago, there is a spot in that match where he climbs the ladder, he grabs the championships, and the ladder gets removed from underneath his feet, and he's hanging from the fucking ceiling. And he has talked about this spot, and he has said that he, you know, basically almost shit himself. Like, he's just terrified. So I cannot imagine that D-Von is climbing that ladder to any great height and doing any kind of big bump like that. Not at this age, he's not. Fuck that. So I figured he was going to get cut off, and they weren't going to force this poor guy to do some kind of big spot off the top of the ladder. So the Hardys, they roughed up D-Von. They placed him on top of the two tables, right? A safer place for him to be. I'll just lay here. You do all the work. Ray Walt on commentary said that he was getting deja vu as Jeff pulled his top off and began to ascend the ladder. And he climbed to the very top of the ladder. And Matt was holding it steady so that his brother would not fall to his doom. And Jeff Hardy comes flying off the top with a swanton bomb off the top of the ladder, and he puts D-Von through a table. And Jeff took a rough landing on this swanton bomb. Yeah, they showed a few replays of it, and he did get the rotation, because at first it almost looked like he didn't rotate enough. I talk about this a lot when I see Tiffany Stratton wrestle. Every single time Tiffany Stratton does a swanton bomb in her match, she waits until the very last second to tuck her head on the landing. And one of these days, this poor girl is going to spike herself on the mat and hurt herself. Like, to a T. Every single time. She did it in the match with Stephanie at Crown Jewel yesterday. So that's kind of what this looked like, where at first it looked like Jeff maybe didn't get the full rotation. He went, like, not head first down, but almost kind of like that. On the replay, it didn't look as bad. But still, when he landed, it looked like he may have smacked the back of his head on the bottom rung of the ladder. And he was even feeling behind his head. Like maybe he knew he smacked his head and was just checking to make sure there was no blood. I didn't see any blood when he came up. I think he was fine. He may have, you know, I mean, he may have banged his head, but he seemed to be okay. And basically, this was the WrestleMania 16 spot recreated. Only instead of Bubba on the table, it was D-Von. So Jeff gets up and he lets out this primal scream to let everybody know, I guess, that he's okay. Back inside the ring, the Hardys hit Bully with a pair of Twist of Fates. Jeff went to the apron. He headed up top, and he hit the Swanton Bomb to Bully Ray. And the Hardys then picked up chairs, and they took turns slamming them over Bully's back. So Bully used the table in the ring to kind of help himself slowly get back up to his feet. And it's as if he knew what lied behind him. Because Bully's back was turned. The Hardys are standing there with chairs in their hands. And Bully is just, he's standing there. And he had just had this look on his face, right? He turns around. He sees the Hardys. The Hardys dump the chairs. They toss the chairs aside. And Bully is staring at them. And he has this look on his face like he's resigned to his fate. And he just sort of nods at them. He's not going to fight back. And why not? Because Bully Ray is 50-something years old. And he's been in this match for the last, you know, 10 or 12 minutes, however long it's been going on. And he is spent. He has been battered. He has been bruised. And not just tonight, but for the last 25 years. And the wars that these two teams have had. And he's outnumbered because his partner is laying in the rubble in the aisleway. He's all by himself. He knows that he's fighting a losing battle here. So he's resigned to his fate. And it's basically like, just put me out of my misery, right? He's waiting for the kill shot. And so Matt and Jeff, they grab a hold of him and they slam him, double Uranagi slam through the table to end the match. And they call for the bell. They play the Hardys music. I know what they were going for here. It's everything that I just explained. I don't know that everybody in the crowd necessarily, or even everybody watching at home, I don't know that a lot of fans necessarily picked up on what this finish was supposed to be. I feel like people are going to look at this in some cases and say, boy, that was an anticlimactic finish. And I could see where people might think it came off that way. But I knew what they were going for. In many ways, it was like WrestleMania 24 and that Ric Flair in the match with Shawn Michaels. It was the same thing where Flair is just struggling to his feet. He's got those fists up like, you know, come on, give me your best shot, right? But at the same time, it's like he knows. And Shawn Michaels says, you know, I'm sorry, I love you. And then he super kicks him and puts him down. You know? The same thing. I mean, didn't we have something like that in that match on Dynamite last year? There was a match, I think, with it might have been Malakai Black's last match. I don't even remember at this point. With Adam Cole. And I think he just let him, you know, hit him with the boom. It was like, just do it, man. Just put me out of my misery. That's what they were going for here. That's the story they were trying to tell. So as usual, Carlos Silva, he enters the ring. He's got the titles to hand to the Hardys. Matt and Jeff, they pulled Bully to his feet and they hugged him. Devon got back into the ring at this point. And all four men shared a very emotional group hug, the final hug, and the fans chanted, "Thank you, Dudleys." The Hardys held up their titles while standing face-to-face with the Dudleys. Then they started to leave the ring. Bully and Devon then reached over and grabbed them and stopped them from leaving. And at that point, Bully and Devon, they reach down and they begin to untie their boots. And the Hardys can pick up on what's going on here. The fans can pick up on what's going on here. And they take their boots off and they hand their boots to the Hardys. Because when your career is over, that is what you do. You take your boots off and you leave them in the ring and you leave. And that signals that your career is over. That's what Triple H did. When Triple H's career was over, he did that, whatever WrestleMania that was. Might have been WrestleMania 38, I think. He took his boots off and he left them in the ring. And so it was a very, you know, emotional moment, and you could tell the Hardys were kind of crying and they were very emotional. I would imagine that was all planned out, but maybe it wasn't. Maybe they didn't know. Who knows? But it came off, you know, in the way that they wanted it to. It came off as a very emotional thing. It was the final match for the Dudleys. You know, you will not see the Dudley boys back in the ring after this. Devon is done. I don't know if that signified that Bully is done, because Bully is still working independence, not necessarily every week. So I don't know if this was the end of the Dudleys, if that's what this was meant to signify, or if we got some news here and Bully is also done. That I'm not sure of. But as a unit, you know, as a tag team, that's it. Team 3D, the Dudleys, that's it. They're done. All the championships they've won, all the promotions, you know, when Mackenzie Mitchell was introducing them at the beginning of the match, and she went through all the different tag team championships that they've held from ECW and WWE Yeah, and they mentioned WCW, but it's kind of bullshit, honestly. Like, it wasn't really WCW at that point. But ECW, WWE, WCW, TNA, NWA, IWGP. She didn't mention HOG. You could put them in there as well. No, but like all the different championships that these guys have held, and I think it's like 20-something tag team titles over the course of their career. They will go down as one of the all-time great tag teams. You know, where they rank on your list is a subjective thing. You know, they're not the greatest tag team on my list. You know, they're not even in my top three, but that's not, it's not meant to be a negative against them. Everyone has their teams that they look at. For some people, it's the Road Warriors. You know, for some people, it might be the Hart Foundation. For some people, it might be the Rock and Roll Express or the Midnight Express, right? Or maybe a more modern team like the Hardy Boys or the Dudley Boys or the Young Bucks. And yes, there are people who would say the Young Bucks. Like, it depends also how old you are, what generation you came up in. It's a subjective thing. You know, Road Warriors is going to be on a lot of people's lists. But they're in the upper echelon of, you know, Hall of Fame legendary tag teams. You know, they've had a very incredible run, which is crazy. If you think about the Dudley gimmick in ECW and how that whole thing started, it was just, it was comedy. Yeah, it was an emotional moment here. And the teams hugged again. They all, you know, all four men raised their arms. The Hardys music played. Bully and Devon, they exited the ring and they kind of put their arm around each other as they slowly made their way toward the entrance. And they had this great sort of panned out shot of them as they're walking down the aisle to the stage. And they stopped and they looked back and they acknowledged the fans. The production team missed it, but while this was going on, because we could hear something happened in the ring, like you heard a bump and the fans reacted, they cheered. And then they cut back to the ring, so we missed it. But I think what happened is that Jeff put himself through a table. I think there was a table propped up in the corner. And I think that Jeff, he was so excited, I think he actually took a table bump, a voluntary table bump. So anyway, it's a very Jeff Hardy thing to do. I enjoyed the match. I already saw some people just before I went live. They were, you know, in the comments shitting on the match, but the post-match was good. I enjoyed all of this. I liked the match. I thought the post-match was fantastic. The post-match, it was really all about that, right? It was about that moment. It was about 25 years. 25 years later, you got two of the three teams that were involved in that legendary match, that legendary series of matches, back in the ring one last time. And I thought that considering how much older they are and how beat up they are, they gave you everything they could, and what they gave you was actually pretty good, all things considered. I don't really think they embarrassed themselves, you know, beyond the point that they're obviously not moving in the way that they would have moved 25 years ago. Hey, guess what? 25 years from now, I'm not going to be moving the same way I'm moving now either. I may not even be here. The sleep schedule that I have, I may not even be here anymore. So yes, 25 years later, I thought all things considered, they did fine. And somebody, and I forgot who it was, shout out to that person, but they were in my mentions on X, and they asked me to address the fact that Jeff Hardy was doing most of the work in this match, and why was that? Well, the answer is very simple, and it's kind of weird to say this, but of all the people in that match, Jeff Hardy, I think physically, is the one who held up the best. Jeff Hardy physically is probably in the best physical condition or shape of anybody in this match, because Matt's, you know, his body is beaten to hell, right? I mean, he could still go, but not the way he used to. And then the Dudleys, right? Their bodies are beaten to shit and they don't move around the way they used to. So if it felt like Jeff was the one who was taking all the big bumps, yeah, there's a reason for that, because for all of the crazy shit that this guy has done in his career, shockingly enough, physically, he was in the best shape of all four men in this match. It's not really a surprise. So that's why it felt that way. But I thought that this was a very fitting homage to the TLC era. And in a weekend where it really did feel like the end of an era on Saturday, and it felt more like the end of an era here on Sunday. You know, John Cena and AJ Styles, the chapter of their careers is coming to a close. But this really was like an era that these guys were a part of. And this felt more like like that WrestleMania 28 moment, right? On a smaller scale, but this was more like that than Cena AJ was. But there's just a lot of this going around, man. A lot of these guys that we grew up watching and that have been around for so long, and you could always rely on them to come back and get the big pop and do a match here and there. Not anymore. You know, their time is coming to an end, whether it's Cena or AJ or Tanahashi or the Dudleys, the Hardys. Eventually the Hardys will have their moment as well. You know, we keep talking about Jericho, and he's going to probably be back in WWE next year. But Jericho's getting up there too, and at some point Jericho's going to step away. Undertaker, right? You don't have those Undertaker WrestleMania matches anymore. All right, these guys are getting old, and they're retiring, and that era is slowly but surely coming to a close. You know, and it's a hard thing to accept, but I look at it and I say, you know what? I'm just glad a lot of these guys are still around, because there were a lot of wrestlers from not only their era, but the era right before, where they're not even here anymore. You know, a lot of those guys didn't even make it to the age of 50. So the fact that these guys are still around and all things considered are in fairly good shape is a plus. You know, I look at that as a positive, that we have so many of those guys that are still around and can enjoy moments like this where they get their flowers when so many before them didn't have their shot. They didn't have that opportunity, unfortunately. But after this, we had the main event. Trick Williams. I didn't envy these two guys, by the way, having to follow the last two matches. That's a tough thing to do. But they were going to try, because it was all about the moment at the end with Mike Santana. But we had Trick Williams defending the TNA World Heavyweight Championship against Mike Santana, who, of course, was flying the TNA flag against Mr. NXT over here, trying to bring the championship back home. Santana comes out through the crowd, and through all the chaos and all the fans and all the people, who does he find? He finds Conan. And I laughed. Because if you know the history of Conan and TNA, you just can't help but laugh, right? There was a lot of animus there. There were lawsuits. There was all kinds of just bad blood there. But there he was. He had the bandana around his face. He pulled it down, and there he is. There's Conan. Conan's everywhere these days, man. He's popping up in AAA on those shows with WWE, and now here he is in TNA. So the crowd was into both of these entrances in such a way where it really did have that big fight feel to it when they came out. Santana got some boos when they announced him from the Bronx, New York, because, of course, I mean, they were in Massachusetts, so what do you expect? Trick Williams grabbed the mic from Mackenzie Mitchell before she could intro him, and then told Santana that he would beat his ass like the Boston Red Sox, so that way they could put the heat on him. And so now the fans booed him. And then he did his own in-ring intro. Santana cut him off with a right hand, and they brawled to the floor where they fought into the crowd. So we got started here. There was no bell. Still no bell yet. We're not officially underway. Williams tried to use a trash can on Santana, but that backfired, and he wound up covered in trash. They brawled back to ringside. Santana dumped a Trick onto the apron with a back suplex. Santana took a minute to celebrate with a fan, and doing so gave Trick the opening to hit Santana with the TNA title. Then the bell rang. Let's reward this bad behavior by ringing the bell here. Ginger says, Conan came back to TNA in 2017. Yes, but there was a lot of bad blood and a lot of history there with Conan and TNA. That's really what I'm referring to. So when I see him in TNA, it just makes me laugh. But you are correct. I do believe that there was at least for a period of time, there was a return there. So Williams hit his Trick shot finish back in the ring and immediately covered Santana, got a close near fall. I wouldn't say it was a very believable near fall, because the idea the match would be over at that point is just, I mean, hilarious. Williams followed that with a Death Valley driver for another near fall. And then Trick hit a spin kick and a jumping neck breaker. He just could not put this man away. Santana charged at Trick and got backdropped to the floor. Outside, Williams used a slingshot to send Santana into the ring post head first. And they cut away for a while to show Trick. He was, you know, playing to the fans. He got to give Santana some time to do his business. When they put the camera back on Santana, he was a bloody mess. He was busted open, like the radio. So Williams backdropped Santana onto the steel steps, the flat part of the steel steps. Williams whipped Santana into the barricade and then took Santana over to his daughter. Because Mike had his daughter there in the front row. And he wanted to make sure that she was going to watch her father take a beating here from the champion. Williams asked Santana's daughter who her daddy was. And she slapped him. And he sold the shit out of that slap. And he stumbled into a tope from Santana, who came flying out of the ring. Back inside, Santana caught Williams with a powerbomb. He went to the top again. Santana hit a 450 splash, only for a near fall. So at this point, Trick's lawyer comes down to the ring. I should mention that earlier in the night, there was a backstage segment. I don't remember. It might have been on the pre-show. I don't remember. But it could have been during the pay-per-view. And he had his lawyer with him. Some guy I had never seen before. So he came out here. And I don't know who this man is. My guess is it's probably someone from developmental. And 5 years from now, 7, 8 years from now, we're going to look back. This guy's going to be on the WrestleMania card somewhere. And it's going to be a trivia note that one day, many years ago, he played Trick Williams' lawyer on a TNA pay-per-view. It's like Tommaso Ciampa many years ago on SmackDown. He played a lawyer and he got his ass kicked by The Undertaker, right? And look at him now. Look at all the success he's had. So I don't know who this person was, but Santana went for his discus lariat. Williams, though, ducked it and he hit a pair of uranagis. Williams went to the top. Santana caught him and climbed up with him. Williams was able to drive Santana to the mat, though, with an avalanche uranagi. But it only netted him a 2 count. So Williams grabbed his belt, and he went for a wild swing. Santana ducked and rolled him up for a 2 count. After some more counters, Santana hits the spin, the block, lariat, but it only got 2. Trick's lawyer got up on the apron again, and this time Santana pulled him into the ring. He gave him a discus lariat, but then Williams catches Santana with this great-looking trick shot, and Santana sold the shit out of it, and that got a great near fall. Okay, unlike the one at the very beginning of the match, this was a great, believable near fall here. Santana now is crawling, and he's looking at his daughter, who's over there in the front row. Right, it's this great shot of him. He's just got, you know, blood all over his face. And Williams charges in for another trick shot. Santana ducks it. Santana blocks another uranagi, hits a flying lariat, and finally, hits the discus lariat. And he covers Trick Williams for the 1-2-3 to bring home the gold. He wins the TNA World Heavyweight Championship. So as Carlos Silva is doing his thing, and he's walking up the stairs with the title to present the championship to Santana, he doesn't even get into the ring yet before we hear Nick Nemeth's music. Because I'm waiting for this big emotional moment, right, where Silva hands him the championship. I mean, he's been waiting for so long to get this moment. And now they're playing Dolph Ziggler's music. And I'm like, what the fuck? So Nemeth comes out and he's got that stupid trophy. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me with this nonsense? Like, I'm not expecting him to successfully cash in, but like, why are you interrupting this moment? Like, what? You better have something real good planned here. So he comes out in the aisle and he's got the trophy. And at that point, the lights go out. So when they come back on, we see, again with the lights out gimmick, by the way, pulling their best Tony Khan here. Lights come back on, and who is in the aisle behind Nemeth? Elias, or Elijah. He's in TNA mode now. I gotta say his TNA name. We see Elijah, and he takes out Nemeth with a guitar shot to the skull. He shatters this white guitar over Nemeth's head. And then he looks up at Santana in the ring because he's got his hat on, right? Like his cowboy hat. And he tips the hat to Santana in the ring. This was the first time, I do believe, that we have seen Elijah since he tore his triceps in that 6-man tag match on NXT back in June, I believe it was. I guess this was his return. But we're not done yet. because in the ring is Frankie Kazarian, the other winner of the Call Your Shot gauntlet from earlier in the show, the co-holder of the dumb trophy that is currently sitting in the aisle. And he realizes, evidently, you are not allowed to cash in for your championship shot unless you have physical possession of the trophy. Apparently, these are the dumb rules that have been set up here. The trophy is over there, though. So he can't cash in because, and Santana at this point sees him. And he's like, fuck, right? Because the trophy is over there in the aisleway and he can't cash in now. It's very stupid. So Santana wipes him out with a lariat. I thought all of this was completely unnecessary. Having now seen what they did, I feel exactly the same way I did when I first heard Nemeth's music hit. All of this should have been cut out. None of this was necessary. None of this added anything here. If anything, it nearly ruined the fucking moment. It didn't serve any significant purpose. You want to bring Elijah back. Elijah is not that big of a deal that he should even be involved in this moment. This was an angle that could have been done on Impact in the opening segment this coming Thursday. Okay, so that's my only gripe about all of this. All of this silly nonsense was just that. It was silly, it was stupid, and it should not have been approved of here for this post-match angle. It was completely unnecessary. So after all this bullshit is over with, Carlos Silva does present the TNA World Heavyweight Championship to Santana. He's very emotional. He brings his daughter into the ring. He hugs her. He's got blood, again, pouring down his face. And he drops down to his knees to, like, basically bow to her. And he holds the championship belt out. And he presents the championship to his daughter. It's a very cool moment, you know, very emotional moment there, and a great moment to end the show. I thought the match was very good in terms of how they built to that finish. It did feel like the crowd was lukewarm in the middle of it. I think that had just more to do, honestly, with the fact that they had just been treated to two very different matches in terms of the X Division match and the tables match. But they were really two of the big attractions on the show, and the crowd really did invest a lot in those two matches. And then you follow that up with this, and it did hurt the match a little bit, but at least they were able to bring them up for the closing moments. You know, that which is the most important part. They were able to bring them up for the finish and Santana winning the championship, and everybody cheered and everybody was very happy. And I don't know if the reaction in New York would have been better or if it would have been comparable, but, you know, he got a good reaction here for the finish. So I enjoyed the match. It was not my favorite match on the show, but I enjoyed the match. I liked the moment even more. And to go back to what I said here at the beginning of the review, you know, I had the chance to watch Mike Santana put together a very impressive body of work because I'm in a unique position where I have a very cool job where I could be there to be able to call these great matches that he was having. And I'm watching him have these matches that I never saw him have in AEW because for the most part, he was a tag team guy, but he never had the opportunity to really show people what he can do. So when he was in there with someone like the Amazing Red, or when he was in there with any number of people that we would bring in for him to wrestle, he was killing it every single time. And it was just a matter of getting the word out there about it and showing people, hey, look at what's going on here. This guy he's rebuilding himself. You know, it's this career revival that he's having here. And we could see it, right, in New York, but soon enough, the entire world will be able to see it. And it's only a matter of time. You know, when Joe Hendry was the TNA World Heavyweight Champion, it just seemed obvious that the next babyface to follow him was going to be Mike Santana. The only question was, who would they put the belt on in between to be the transitional champion effectively? Because I didn't think they were going to have Santana have to beat Hendry. You got two guys that people like, right? That doesn't really make sense. So this moment was a long time coming. And it was a lot of injury. It was a lot of bullshit. It was a lot of just unhappiness with the position that he was in. He took a chance on himself, and it's very cool to see someone who does that, that it pays off for them, and it results in good things for them. You know, I like when good things happen to good people, and Mike Santana is good people, and I was very happy to see him get this moment. Long may he reign. I hope that he will have a very successful championship run. Where the future leads him, we'll see. You know, he's made a lot of appearances this year on NXT. I am sure he is not done making appearances on NXT. And one day we should see him on Raw or we should see him on SmackDown. But that's for later on. There's no reason for him to worry about that right now. I think he's in a very good spot. I think he knows that there are eyes on him from WWE, among other places. And right now, the focus should be just going out there and flying the flag for TNA. TNA is going to be announcing a new television deal any week now, heading into 2026. Who knows? Maybe on the CW network. They may have more eyeballs on that show than they've had since the Spike TV days. Mike Santana now is going to be the poster boy for that. He's going to have his face plastered on all of that. He will be the face of that television show. And that's a damn good spot for him to be in. So I enjoyed this show. I had a lot of fun watching it. There was some very head-scratching booking decisions here and some stuff I didn't agree with. We went through all of that. But on the whole, I thought this show was fun and I really enjoyed it. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll, see if you guys agree. What did you think of Bound for Glory 2025? 80% thumbs up. And just shy of 20% thumbs down for this show. So it seems like you guys are in agreement with me on that. And we got some good wrestling this weekend. We got that John Cena AJ Styles match, which was excellent. We had that X Division title match tonight, which was excellent, finish aside. We got some good wrestling this weekend. All right, let's take a look at your messages and get you guys out of here. Don't forget that Raw begins in about, 7 hours? I will not be up at 8 o'clock in the morning to watch Raw. Raw will be waiting for me when I'm good and ready to watch Raw. And then I will have to let you guys know when I plan to go live tomorrow, because I will go live, I'm not exactly sure when at this point. Today's episode is sponsored by Factor. Finding time to cook can be tough any time of year. But right now, the fall has been pretty overwhelming. I mean, what with all the different shows that I've been producing, many of them at weird hours. House of Glory, we just had our biggest show of the year this past week. And on top of all that, the days are getting shorter. So the thought of taking the time to prepare a nice meal is tough to swallow, which is why I love Factor so much. Their chef-prepped, dietitian-approved meals make it easy to stay on track and enjoy something delicious, no matter how hectic the season gets. With Factor, you can choose from a wider selection of weekly meal options, including premium seafood choices like salmon and shrimp, at no extra cost. Enjoy even more GLP-1 friendly meals and new Mediterranean options packed with protein and fats that are good for you. For the first time, try Asian-inspired meals with bold flavors influenced by China, Thailand, and more. From more choices to better nutrition, that's why 97% of customers say that Factor helped them live a healthier life. So you can feel the difference no matter what your routine may be. You know, I've eaten my share of Factor meals in the time since I first learned about them, and I always put over the same sesame teriyaki filet mignon that I had a few months ago. It is still my favorite, but they've all been enjoyable, and I know it will be for you too. I'm looking at one of the upcoming menus for this week. They break them down week by week on their website. Listen to this. They've got browned butter grilled chicken and Yukon mash with roasted green beans and mushrooms. That's if you're looking for a high-protein, calorie-smart option. Or maybe you're more into the truffle butter filet mignon if you want a low-carb, fiber-filled option. The key word is option. They have tons of them to suit your palate and meet your nutritional needs. I say it every time. These are not TV dinners that you heat up when you have nothing better to make. These are tasty, dietitian-designed meals that arrive ready to heat and eat in just 2 minutes. Factor takes care of the hard part. Let them take care of it for you, too, with this exclusive offer for Solomonster listeners. Eat smart at factormeals.com/solomonster50off and use code solomonster50off to get 50% off your first box, plus free breakfast for 1 year. That's code solomonster50off at factormeals.com for 50% off your first box, plus free breakfast for 1 year. Get delicious, ready-to-eat meals delivered with Factor. Offer only valid for new Factor customers with code and qualifying auto-renewing subscription purchase. Hey, shout-out to Tommy Colella with the $20 Super Chat. Where are we? I didn't check the likes, by the way. Ricky says 355. All right, so we may have to skip Be the Booker tonight. We don't hit 400. That's all right. Tommy says, so I was thinking, since Cena is going to face Dom at Survivor Series. Well, we assume that he's going to face Dom at Survivor Series. That's what Meltzer is reporting. Do you think there is a chance in hell that he's going to win the IC title? And since he's facing Gunther in his final match, that Gunther would take the title? Do I think there's a chance? Yes, there's a chance. I don't want to see it. Absolutely, there's a chance that John Cena will win the Grand Slam and win the Intercontinental Championship. I just would rather not see that. I don't see what's gained if Gunther wins the Intercontinental title. It's a step down for him. Unless they just want to keep this whole thing going where it's like, you know, 85% of his run, he's been holding a championship. He has to be holding a championship of some kind. Like, who cares? Like, he's above that. I don't think he needs the Intercontinental title back. Retro KOH, Triple H heard fans say they wanted Edge. So we had the WWE Vault upload him beating Edge for the world title in 2005. Hashtag LOL Triple H. Yep, they did upload that match to the Vault channel earlier. I did notice. That's funny how that works, isn't it? Boots says, when Bubba slowly turned around and accepted his fate, I shed a little tear as he went through the table. Only thing missing was Edge and Christian. Wrestling News CO, again, thank you very much, my friends. Love your show, they say. Love the site. Keep up the good work. Corey Blake with the 10 says, congrats to Mike Santana. His story proves that perseverance, hard work, and dedication pays off. AEW dropped the ball on him, but he bet on himself, and now he is a world champion. Man, where's Ortiz? I know he was hurt, but I think he's not hurt anymore, and you don't really hear about Ortiz. Tony Khan does not appear to be doing anything with Ortiz. Now you know why Mike Santana probably left AEW. I think that says it all. Bobby Means says, Javon Evans is definitely the future of WWE, in my opinion. I believe there is a strong possibility that he becomes the new NXT champion. Come Stand and Deliver. We are officially in the youth movement of WWE. Well, I'll tell you what, the youth movement of WWE is something that they're going to have to embrace because they're aging out. They're aging out. You see all these legends, again, that are winding down their careers, either fully or they're just not going to be full-time anymore because they just can't do it anymore. You've got to invest in youth. And Javon Evans is definitely going to be a major star for them. I see there were people who believe that he should be called up to the main roster right now. And you could do that. I'm all for shaking up the rosters and calling people up from NXT. Javon Evans would not be one of them. Not yet. Javon Evans is 21 years old. Let him continue to run in NXT. Give him the opportunity to hold the NXT championship and be the face of a brand. And let him run with that for a year, year and a half, 2 years, however long it may be. And he'll be in a much better position, I think, to bring value to the main roster once you're ready to call him up to Raw or SmackDown. Because it's not as if they have this lack of talent. It's plenty of talent. It's about what you do with that talent. Javon is going to be there. But you don't need to rush him to the main roster just yet. Now, I think about that. Like, he's 21 years old. If you bring him up to the main roster now and give him a big push, I mean, it'll be 9 years before he turns 30. Like, you really do run the risk of burning some of these stars out a little too soon. You've got to take great care with some of these people and not rush them and not, you know, too much too soon. That's like, I talked about that with Stephanie Vaquer and all the championships and all the gold, all the success that she's had so far in the main roster. And I just really hope they have a good, you know, plan to follow up on all of this great success that she's had, because if not, you'll see within a matter of months, people will start complaining about, you know, oh, it's stale. Her run is stale. Her run, I like her, but her run sucks, or I'm bored of her. All she does is the devil's kiss. It's coming. Oh, it's coming. You've got to make sure you've got a good plan for these people. Anyway, if you didn't hear the podcast earlier today, go back and check it out. It's a good show. Talked about a lot of WWE and AEW stuff, some NXT as well, some other news and notes, Raja Jackson, the little Paul Heyman, Braun Strowman beef, Dark Side of the Ring news, a lot of good stuff on the show today. I will be live tomorrow. I don't know what time. It will not be 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night. It may be in the evening, maybe 8 o'clock. I'll try to go earlier if I can. I may not be able to. So I will keep you guys posted on X. Or just, you know, make sure your notification bell is on. And once the page goes up, you should get some kind of a notification. And then hopefully I will see you there. And we get to start the week all over again. We got a full week of shows coming up. So be well. Stay safe. Have yourselves a good night. And I will see you back here for more Sound Off in less than 24 hours, I guess. I'll see you back here soon. Until then, take care, guys.